from the back cover. The French have failed in northern Vietnam and the peasants are fleeing to the south to escape the brutal communist regime swooping in to fill the void. When Dennis Mitchell is granted salvation and delivered from personal demons, in gratitude he sets out to help others that are suffering. He is led to Michigan State University, where a missionary group is preparing to embark overseas to offer humanitarian relief in South Vietnam. While in Michigan, he meets Mariana, a Croatian woman embroiled in personal battles of her own as a result of her father's complicity with the Vatican and Hitler's Nazi invasion of Italy and the Balkans. His heart goes out to her and he quickly falls in love with the woman. At the outbreak of the Vietnam War, all non-governmental aid agencies, including Michigan State University Missions Group, are expelled. Mitchell, due to his naive altruistic belief that he can continue to help that country's beleaguered people, enlists in the American military so he can return to Vietnam. Due to his learned proficiency with the language, Dennis soon finds himself a Special Forces Green Beret soldier recruited to work with the CIA and finds himself a reluctant participant in some of that war's disturbingly appalling atrocities. After the war, the highly decorated, injured and disillusioned soldier reunites with his beloved Mariana and attempts to put the pieces of his integrity back together only to be used and abandoned by the one he loves. He resorts to doing what he knows best, that is, helping others. He sets out on a humanitarian mission of his own. In order to reach out and provide counsel and comfort to homeless, addicted and afflicted veterans, Mitchell himself takes to living on the mean streets of America's inner city, seeking those he would render aid. In the commission of his street missionary work, he is once again brutally betrayed and defiled. Will our hero's efforts all be for naught, or will his legacy of benevolence endure? Benevolence endures, pushing back the darkness. George James Hughes, Things Unseen Publishing. Copyright 2015 by George James Hughes. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced, distributed or transmitted in any form or by any means, without prior written permission. www.thingsunseen.ca, Windsor, Nova Scotia. Publisher's note: these are works of fiction. Some names, characters, places, and incidents are real, and have been incorporated into these tales. Locales and public names are sometimes used for atmospheric purposes. Any resemblance to actual people, living or dead, has been carefully considered, and the author acknowledges complete responsibility and accepts sole liability for any consequences of such usage. Book layout copyright 2015, bookdesigntemplates.com. Front cover design: Gary G. Parsons Design and George. Benevolence Endures, George James Hughes, 1st edition. ISBN 978-1511756020. For Anne Marie Hughes. You are always in my heart. Philip dear, God always does things for a reason, even if we can't see what that reason may be. Anne Marie Hughes, 1934-2012. With special thanks to Rita Van Vuren for her encouragement and for helping me remember what really matters in life. Now from his breast into his eyes the ache of longing mounted, and he wept at last. His dear wife, clear and faithful, in his arms, longed for as the sun-warmed earth is longed for by a swimmer. Spent in rough water where his ship went down under Poseidon's blows, gale winds and tons of sea. Few men can keep alive through a big surf to crawl, clotted with brine, on kindly beaches in joy, knowing the abyss behind, and so she too rejoiced, her gaze upon her husband, her white arms round him pressed as though forever. Then said Odysseus, "My dear, we have not won through to the end. One trial, I do not know how long, is left for me to see fulfilled." The Odyssey, Homer. Chapter 1. There are those whose feet fall upon this path of human sojourn with such steadfastness that it shouts a testimonial to their confidence and assurance. Their attitude may be the result of a clearer understanding of their purpose in life, or perhaps a byproduct of the many successes that some have come to enjoy. Regardless, whether founded or perhaps even falsely contrived, their gait is nonetheless one of great boldness and surety. Whether motivated by reason or sustained by faith, they happily forge on, concerning themselves little with the question of how it came to be that they are the recipients of such munificent grace whilst traveling along upon their road of happy destiny. This is not their tale. Rather, this is the story of a soul who, having been pulled to sea by a riptide of circumstance, himself the author of the consequences that have been perpetuated by his carelessness and foolish actions, finds himself like waterlogged flotsam, tossed about in the depths of despair and depravity. Repeatedly pounded upon the rugged shores of his own miserable existence, he finally emerges, battered and bruised, exhausted and near death, having been spewed from the grips of certain and deserved demise by a miraculous salvation of Jonah-like proportions. He stood ankle-deep in the surf with the tide tugging at his ankles, a glistening mixture of foam and beige sand swirling abrasively, rasping at his pale skin, coursing its way through his toes as the tug of the moon encouraged the grains to find their way back to the sea. The Holy Spirit cloaked his shivering, near-naked body and soothed the chill. He stepped away from the surf, dismayed. Taking a brief inventory, he recognized that he had been delivered from an incredible encounter with his mortality. He jubilantly sought to speak of and to give praise of thanksgiving to that which he knew to be the architect of his miraculous salvation and resurrection. Certain that he had been the recipient of a supernatural act of grace, the man raised his hands, calling out to the heavens in gratitude. His eyes, wide and bright, were once again lowered to the earthly horizon. In the distance, a billowing of gray smoke lazily curled skyward before being swept up by the offshore breeze and quickly dissipated. The castaway guessed that it would most likely be coming from a cooking fire. Padding along the wet sand in the direction of the smoke, his footprints made the only such damp impressions upon the beach. Searching for a path that would lead him to the source of the smoke, he walked about a quarter of a mile along the tide line before finding a trail that bisected a thicket of scraggy brush edging the periphery. The exit spilled its rusty soil onto the tiny ashen dunes of drifting sand that lapped their way along the edge of the beach. The man followed the path for several minutes as it wended its way through a small wood of thin alders. From above, the dry leaves breathed a rustling of whispered welcome. Like a beacon, the sounds of voices and muted peals of merriment wafted faintly through the trees and encouraged the wanderer. Eventually, the path opened up onto a broad clearing. He descended into a small gully. At the bottom, a row of smooth, round stones were placed in such a way as to provide a footbridge, presumably for when the frequent coastal rains turned the fine silt that now lay aridly rinclad and cracked into a sloppy ooze that could suck the footwear right off one's feet. Each autumn, many youngsters sheepishly mucked their way home with either one or both feet devoid of the rubber boots that their mother so diligently insisted they don prior to their frequent forays to the beach. Some of these pieces of lost footwear snorkeled their way to the surface and were recovered in the spring. Most were not. The man danced his bare feet across the stones and on the other side tenderly ascended the gravel incline onto the narrow shoulder of a small dirt road that ended abruptly at the ditch that marked the beginning of the trailhead. Along the road on both sides, small, tidy houses nestled themselves back into a ring of cedar trees that circled the clearing. Many women and young children could be seen busying themselves with their chores. Several had gathered near the end of the street and were tending a surprisingly large cooking fire that was evidently being used to prepare a meal. It had been the smoke of this fire that had guided the man to the small village. Other women were engaged in tasks such as sewing or cleaning. Their daughters stood at their side, absorbing the instructions that were being carefully and methodically espoused. Still others gathered into small groups and chatted amongst themselves. Those that noticed the man's arrival hushed their conversations and with wary curiosity quietly speculated amongst themselves. The man strode up onto the cul-de-sac and stopped. He stood in the middle of the road and called out, "Come quick. I have a tale to tell of a miraculous event. Truly I say to you, I once was lost and now have been found thanks to the glory of the Almighty. Come share of this miracle and behold the glory of God." Though all had heard him bellow and cease their activities to look towards the disheveled man, none came running. In fact, all ignored his invitation and either cast their eyes away or simply returned to their occupations. Some children that had been scurrying after each other playing a raucous game of tag halted and warily returned to their mothers. A hush fell over the previously robust plethora of activity and seemed to suffocate the very energy that merely a moment before had so readily emanated. Astounded by the lack of reception, the man fell silent. He didn't even consider that perhaps his ravings had been taken for those of a madman. With confused disbelief, he peered out over his audience in an effort to meet the gaze of someone, anyone, willing to acknowledge and engage him. One woman, apparently one of the most senior of the women, who was tending the fire that the stranger could now see was being used to roast a medium-sized hog, stepped forward, flanked by two much younger women. She confidently proceeded to walk several paces towards the newcomer. Her face registered neither welcome nor displeasure. She surveyed his tattered appearance and finally smiled at him and nodded a greeting. She turned to one of the women and quietly spoke to the younger female who, after an obedient nod of acknowledgement, returned to the fire. The young woman then whispered to yet another female who was seated with her young son. His chest was still gently heaving from the exertions of his participation in the game of tag. The lad's mother rhythmically swirled a long-handled ladle through a thin cloud of steam rising gently from a creamy liquid that simmered inside a broad, three-legged, severely blackened cast-iron cauldron nestled into the coals beneath the glistening amber-colored hog. The mother nodded her head as she received the relayed instruction. Then, bending from the waist, she leaned forward to whisper into the ear of the youngster. The boy, perhaps 8 or 9 years old, obediently scampered towards one of the simple and modest houses. As the youngster made his way into the house, the spokeswoman turned again to the stranger and said, "Come." He was led to the fire, where he stood patiently watching the matron as she poked about the coals. He was slightly bemused by the lack of conversation, however, he chose to remain silent. Within minutes the boy returned. He dutifully presented to his mother a wooden bowl and white tin spoon that he clutched tightly in his small hands. She thanked her son for the bowl and suggested the lad give the spoon to the newcomer. With a nod from the older woman, she then carefully ladled a generous portion of the stewed vegetables into the bowl and dipped the long-handled cup once again into the steam, withdrawing a full mayosure of the smooth broth and basted the aromatic slurry over top of the vegetables. She handed the bowl to her son who, with great pride, carefully took 2 steps towards the stranger and presented the offering. Gratefully the man received the bowl and immediately, very deliberately, thanked all three, first the boy, then his mother who had been tending the stew, and lastly, he turned to face the matriarch in order to offer his gratitude for their collective hospitality. The woman had returned her attention to the skewered pig that another young female was slowly turning above the flameless coals. The older woman succinctly nodded towards the hog's attendant, indicating that she should halt her rotisserie. With a large carving knife, the matriarch deftly sliced into the rump of the animal, dissecting a large piece of the well-roasted flesh and allowed it to peel onto a square wooden platter that she held beneath the roasting animal's haunches. Turning, with a warm smile she presented the meat to the stranger. "I'm sorry but we haven't begun making the biscuits yet," she said. "Our menfolk aren't due to return for several hours hence, and it just wouldn't do to serve them after they had cooled. I'm sure you understand," she added pleasantly. "Thank you. You are most kind. Please forgive my tattered appearance and seeming lack of good manners. I'm afraid the aroma of this repose has overwhelmed me, and I cannot for the life of me recall when last I supped. My name is Dennis. Dennis Mitchell. Of course, I understand completely. Think nothing of it. It is a pleasure to meet you, Mr. Mitchell. My name is Isabel Morgan. There is a table beside that house where you may seat yourself," she said, indicating the blue and white bungalow situated at the end of a short walkway framed by a small, recently whitewashed picket fence, the very same house from which the boy had retrieved the utensils. "Do you prefer wine or ale?" "Oh no. Thank you, just the same, beer and wine do not agree with me. You have already been very kind with your provision of this meal." "Not at all. Would you like some water or a cup of tea, perhaps?" "Tea would be very welcomed, madam," he replied. "Very well. We shall bring it over to you when it is ready. After you've eaten, you may like to rest a while. I don't mean to be overly opinionated, but you look a little weary." Should you have the need to make use of the hammock that has been strung between the trees in the common at the footpath near the end of the street, we would think none the less of you. As I've said, our men will return shortly, and then you may speak to the elders in order to present yourself and your intentions, should you have any, that is. Should you decide to move along, please kindly leave the platters on the table, and thank you for permitting us to be of service. May you fare well. Indeed. However, it is certainly I who owes the debt of gratitude. You have been most generous and kind. Go ahead and eat before your food goes cold, Mr. Mitchell. Turning, Dennis Mitchell headed off to find the table, but after only a few steps inside the small picketed gate, he turned and addressed the now fully attentive gathering of women and children once more. God bless you all, he said. Wiping the carving knife with a spotless towel, the matriarch returned the blessing, saying, and you as well.